The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of Salem Communications, staff, management, or advertisers.
Activist Radio is on the air.
You have tuned in to the Mark Harrington Show, sponsored by Created Equal.
Mark is training a new generation of leaders
to take on the culture of death and win. All right.
If you don't like abortion, don't have one.
The only thing that can be said to be objective truth is that there is no objective truth.
It does come out in one piece. It comes out in one piece.
I would argue that we certainly are not all created equal.
And now, here's Mark.
The Bible says in 2 Timothy chapter 2, "You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is Jesus Christ. And the things that you've heard from me, say in the presence of many witnesses and trust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." Now, I refer to that as the Great Transfer. You've heard of the Great Commission. We understand what that one is. Matthew 28, verse 18. Go there and make disciples of the nations. We understand that. But this is the Great Transfer. That is transferring our faith to the next generation of leaders. That's our responsibility. And in this passage, the Apostle Paul is talking to his understudy, Timothy, and saying, listen, this is how it works. Multi-generational faithfulness with the Word of God, with the teachings of Scripture, with apologetics, that is the ability to make a defense for the hope that we have within us, but do it with gentleness and respect. So that's what we try to do here at Created Equal. We are a training program. We believe that students learn well if they're taught in the classroom and then taken out and given an opportunity to use what they've learned in front of people that disagree with them. What a novel idea, huh? And taking them to college campuses and places all across this country. And we're going to talk about that today. And one of my mentors, a good friend, Scott Klusendorf, who is the president of Pro-Life Training, Life Training Institute, is with us today. Scott, thanks for being on the Mark Harrington Show.
Mark, always good to be with you, my friend.
I appreciate you coming on, Scott. And folks, if you haven't heard of Scott, and you probably have, but he's authored several books. He's traveling the country, training people how to defend the faith. Scott, if you would, I want to jump right in here because our time is limited today. If you had 5 minutes with someone who disagreed with you on abortion, what would you say?
Let's assume we only had a minute to make a pro-life case, Mark.
Okay.
You're a college student. The reporterette from the campus newspaper puts her recording device to your mouth and says, tell me why you're not pro-choice. The first thing I would do is make my case in a minute or less, and I would say something like the following. I am pro-life because the science of embryology establishes that each of us, including you, Ms. Reporterette, began at fertilization. We didn't come from an embryo. We once were an embryo. Philosophically, there's no essential difference between that embryo you once were and the young adult you are today that would justify taking your life at that earlier stage of development. Differences of size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency are not good reasons for saying you could be killed then, but not now. Now, as you can see, Mark, that took a minute or less. But what it does, the power of that, is it forces this debate into the question of knowledge, not subjective opinion. I actually made an argument there. Now, maybe my argument's a bad one. Maybe it's mistaken. But you can't just dismiss it as, oh, that's your subjective religious view. You have to engage it. And that's the beauty of knowing how to state your case clearly and concisely.
My guest is Scott Klusendorf. He's the president of Life Training Institute. Folks, you need to go to their website. I'll tell you up front here, prolifetraining.com. Some great resources there on how to defend the pro-life view in the public square. In fact, that is their mission, to train others to save lives and to train others to defend their views in the public square with science, philosophy, and the gospel of Jesus Christ. So, Scott, we're gonna try to get to some of these hard questions that we hear all the time. Let's start out with the one we hear often, and that is, what if a woman is raped? Doesn't that justify her having an abortion?
Always important to show empathy for the victim of sexual assault. Don't just jump right into, as some pro-lifers do, oh, well, you know, less than 1% of all women who are raped get pregnant. Better approach is to say, you know what, you're right, that woman has suffered a terrible tragedy. So here's the question. Given you and I both agree that she suffered a terrible tragedy, and given both you and I agree that she may in fact have difficult memories every time she looks at a child that was conceived through rape, how do you think a civil society ought to treat innocent human beings that remind us of a painful event? I let the question sink in, and then I simply say, is it okay to kill them so we can feel better? What this does, mm-hmm. Mark, is return the issue right back to the question, what is the unborn? Because if the unborn are human, like, say, toddlers or teenagers or adults, then killing them to make others feel better is a clear wrong. So we want to do two things here. We want to show empathy for the victim who's been raped, but we also want to show that the issue really isn't rape in the last analysis. The real issue here is, what is the unborn? Is it okay to kill one human so another can feel better?
My guest is Scott Klusendorf with Life Training Institute. Go to prolifetraining.com. Okay, Scott, this is going to be a rapid fire here so we can get in as much as we can with our listeners here. Let's ask this question. What about the so-called exception for the life of the mother? Is that permissible? Is it permissible for a woman to have an abortion if her life is truly threatened?
I think we ought to define our terms when this comes up. What do we mean by abortion? Abortion is the intentional killing of a human fetus. In the case of something like, say, ectopic pregnancy, it is often necessary to end the pregnancy to save the mother's life, but it is not the same as intentional killing of a human fetus. So let's say you're a pro-life doctor and you are presented with a woman who has an ectopic pregnancy, which does in fact present a grave threat to her life. And anybody who doubts this can visit the Mayo Clinic website or the CDC website to see what I'm talking about. You're a pro-life physician. Do you do nothing and let two people die? Or do you act in such a way that you save one life, even though the unintended but foreseeable result is the death of the human embryo? And the answer is, you act to save the mother's life. As that embryo grows in that fallopian tube, the risk to hemorrhage is severe. And if you do nothing, you're going to lose both of them. The child can't survive without the mother at that stage, and the mother will die from the bursting of the tube. So you do the greatest moral good you can in that case, which is to act to save one life, even though the foreseen but unintended result is the death of the embryo.
All right. Good answer. Good answer. Ding, ding, ding. We know that's a good one there, Scott. Let's move on to, what about the argument that pro-lifers only care about the babies when they're inside the womb, but they don't care about them afterwards, after they're born? And then they'll just say, well, are you ready to adopt? Are you going to adopt?
Well, we know for a fact that pro-lifers do care. We've got pregnancy centers that outnumber abortion clinics by a very wide margin, and these centers do care for women after they give birth. But let's set that aside for the moment. How does my alleged unwillingness to care for a child or adopt a child justify an abortionist intentionally killing him? Mm-hmm. Imagine if I said to you, unless you agree to adopt my three sons by noon tomorrow, I shall execute them. If you turn me down, Mark, does that mean I'm justified executing my three sons? Which, by the way, is an impossibility. They're all larger than me now. But pretend I had that power. It clearly would not be the case that I'm justified executing them simply because you refuse to adopt them. Look, if the unborn are human, they shouldn't be killed simply because others don't want to take care of them any more than we'd walk into an orphanage and kill all those children because they appear to be unwanted.
If you like what you're hearing, which I know you do, you want to go to Life Training Institute's website at prolifetraining.com. Invite Scott or one of his many great speakers to come to your high school, come to your pregnancy center banquet or Right to Life banquet, or to come to your college or university and speak and train and equip you so you can go out and make a difference in the culture. Scott and his team are really, in my opinion, the best. There is no better group in the country training young people and others to make a difference in the culture. So please, please go to ProLifeTraining.com. And also you can get his book, which is called The Case for Life, one of the best primers on the pro-life issue that I think has been written. You can go and get that on the website. Okay, Scott, here, let's ask this question. You know, we hear a lot about this, the war on women, the so-called war on women, and that is that trying to restrict abortion or end abortion is simply a war on women. We are against women. This is a women's issue or woman's issue, and that men should have no say in it. How do you answer that?
Well, there's an old saying in law school, when you have the facts, pound the facts. If you don't have the facts, pound the table and do it loudly. And that's exactly what's going on here. We're ignoring the question, what is the unborn,
right,
and instead making it personal. Well, you're a man, you can't speak on this issue. Well, that's a silly argument. Imagine someone saying, unless you're a general, you have no right to discuss the morality of war. Or how about this? We can't have any female sportscasters broadcasting NFL football games because they have no idea what a groin injury feels like on the football
good one.
Field. You know, this is nonsense. And by the way, pro-life women use the same arguments as pro-life men, so attacking gender isn't going to get the job done. And by the way, Roe v. Wade was decided by 9 men, so
right.
I guess we'd have to reverse that if men can't speak on abortion. So the argument's a silly one. As far as a war on women, my question is, which women?
Yeah.
Are you talking about only some women or all women? If we're talking about all women, then that raises the question, are unborn women members of the human family, which really is the issue. You see, we can't escape that central question mark, what is the unborn? It always comes back, and our job as pro-lifers is to force it back to that question, not let our opponents lead us down rabbit trails.
My guest is Scott Klusendorf with Life Training Institute. Scott, we got about a minute here. I'm going to try to have you ask this question. The issue of so-called bodily autonomy. And the question is this. Since a fetus doesn't have the right to a woman's body without consent, don't women have the right to abort or withhold support from the fetus?
Well, we have to first point out that abortion is much more than merely withholding support. It's actively killing another human being through poisoning, dismemberment, and the like. I think Frank Beckwith puts it real well. Calling abortion merely the withholding of support is kind of like suffocating someone with a pillow and calling it the withdrawing of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot more going on here than merely withholding support. And there's a lot more we could say about this. If you want to take it up after the break, we can. But I do cover that bodily rights argument in my book, The Case for Life.
Scott Klusendorf is my guest, folks. You got to go to ProLifeTraining.com and check into some of their resources. Get the book, The Case for Life. Invite them to come to your church, your group, your school, your banquets. I mean, I'll tell you, Scott will light it up and really inform people and get them ready to defend the pro-life position in the public square. You're listening to The Mark Harrington Show. By the way, go to createdequal.net to find out more about us. We'll be right back with Scott in a minute.
What do other pro-life leaders think of Mark Harrington and Created Equal? Listen to Lila Rose of Live Action.
I just wanted to say that I stand 100% with the efforts of Created Equal, with getting the truth visually out to students on campuses and inspiring them and equipping them to have that debate with fellow students, to encourage them to really question their support for abortion and encourage them ultimately to see the humanity of the unborn child, the violence of abortion, and ultimately to join our side, which is the winning side, the side of life.
Mark Harrington is a missionary and free speech advocate, and Mark has been on the front line of the debate over abortion for over 20 years. Mark needs your prayers and financial support. Please support Mark and Created Equal by going to createdequal.net or send a check to Created Equal, Post Office Box 360502, Columbus, Ohio 43230. Your gifts are tax deductible.
That's right. That's me. I'm active. And I'm on the radio. That's the Mark Harrington Show you're listening to here on WRFD. Folks, you can check into our archive programs by going to createdequal.net if you want to listen to the audio portions of this. We're also on iTunes if you want to get the podcasts and listen to them at your own leisure. My guest is Scott Klusendorf with Life Training Institute. The website is prolifetraining.com. Scott, in the next this segment here, I'd like to try to cram in a couple of things, but I do need to ask you this. This is what we hear most often on college campuses, and that is this, that the fetus is not self-aware. The fetus is not sentient. Therefore, the fetus does not deserve the same rights of personhood that born people do. How do you answer that question?
Well, notice they're simply asserting that self-awareness or whatever accidental trait they pick out is what is decisive. But why should we believe that? They need to present an argument for why those things are value-giving in the first place. It's not enough to simply assert that they are. But secondly, these things always end up discrediting far more than just the unborn. Mm-hmm. If self-awareness is what makes us valuable, newborns fail to qualify because they're not self-aware until several weeks after birth. If it's the ability to feel pain that makes us valuable, well, then those who have diseases where they can't feel pain, as some people outside the womb do, then they don't get to enjoy the rights of personhood either. But the biggest issue with all of these types of arguments, Mark, is that they can't account for human equality. If human equality is based on something like self-awareness, which comes in degrees, meaning yes, we all have it in varying degrees, then guess what? Basic human rights also come in varying degrees, which means you can take the concept of human equality and throw it on the ash heap. We have a better answer as pro-lifers. We argue that each and every human being is equal not by function, meaning what we can do in terms of self-awareness or the like. Rather, we are equal because we all have the same human nature. We're equal by nature, not function. Having a human nature is an either-or proposition. You either have it or you don't. You don't get it in degrees. Well, when does our human nature come to be? Well, it comes to be when we come to be. And we know when that point is, at the very beginning, fertilization. And our argument can actually give a good reason why there is such a thing as human equality, while the functionalist premise of abortion choice advocates cannot.
Now, Scott, let me ask you this question that, you know, kind of follows after what you've just been talking about. And that is, let's say that you get people who say, okay, I recognize that the preborn are human. I understand their nature. And I understand the idea of equality, but listen, what makes you different or the human species different than any other species? I mean, if they're non-Christians and they still reason to the conclusion that the science is right and they'll even grant you some of the philosophy, but you can't get them to say that abortion is wrong, don't you have to enter into the question of religion and the theology behind this or not?
Well, there's a whole lot of things you raised there, so let me dice them out one at a time. Let's take the humans being no special species argument,
right,
that animals are all the same.
Yeah.
Why did we get so angry at Michael Vick, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback a number of years ago, when he was caught using dogs in fighting rings and killing and abusing dogs who lost fights? He even went to jail for this. Well, we didn't punish the dogs who tore each other up in these dog fights. We punished Michael Vick and his friends. We punished Michael Vick, and here's why. Because we expect better of him as a man.
Mm-hmm.
We understand animals don't have the same capacity for moral awareness that humans do. Even our understanding of medical pathology assumes human exceptionalism. For example, a squirrel that can't read is not a tragedy. But a 16-year-old young woman who can't is one. We understand that by her nature, the 16-year-old is not flourishing if she can't read or interact with her community. The squirrel, meanwhile, is not showing a lack of an ability to flourish if it can't read because it's not proper for it to read. We also understand, as Christopher Kaiser points out, that there's a difference between a hit and run with a hedgehog and a hit-and-run with a newborn, even a developmentally disabled one. Or, as Kazzer likes to point out, there's a world of difference between eating a hamburger and eating a Harold burger. We know these things intuitively, and anybody who claims we can't know them, they don't need an argument. They need a psychologist. There's something wrong with them. These are intuitive things I think we can point out to people that make it self-evidently true that humans are exceptional in that regard. Now, that doesn't give us the right to mistreat animals, but it does show there's a qualitative difference between us. You mentioned the God question.
Yes.
You're right.
Right.
In order to ground the claim that the fetus has a right to life, ultimately you would be pushed to a theistic foundation. But guess what? You can't tell me why anything has a right to life without a theistic foundation. You can't tell me why a teenager does, or a newborn does, or a senior citizen does. Look, if it's true that this universe came from nothing and was caused by nothing, the modern materialistic Darwinian worldview. If that is true, all of us are cosmic accidents, Mark, regardless of our stage of development. So that argument, again, not only disqualifies the unborn, it disqualifies many, well, all of us outside of it as well.
Scott Klusendorf is my guest. You can go to prolifetraining.com. He's the president of Life Training Institute. If you like what you hear, folks, you got to go to the website. You got to listen to their podcasts. You got to invite Scott and or his team to your area. Scott, we got about 3 minutes. Now, I know this isn't going to, the time isn't going to do it justice, but we've got an election coming up. We hear a lot of things within the pro-life movement about the argument that we cannot vote for the lesser of two evils. How do you respond to that as we approach the November election, which by any account is going to be one of the most important elections of our lifetime, at least on the off year, as far as regards in controlling the Senate? How do you respond to pro-life Christians who say we can't vote for the lesser of two evils,
well, first of all, we need
to vote for, you know, the pure candidate, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, well, I reject their premise that it's a lesser of two evils question. It's a greater moral good question. What is the greatest moral good I can do given the situation I've been dealt, given the election cycle I'm in? And I have a responsibility to always do the greatest objective moral good I can given the hand I've been dealt. So if I'm dealing with a candidate who supports abortion wholesale, and I'm dealing with another presidential candidate that will limit that evil, though not as far as I would like, then I'm going to vote to limit the evil, because that is a way to promote the good insofar as possible at that moment. Now, there is an issue of what do you do at the legislative level, where one party is unashamedly promoting abortion wholesale, and another does a less than perfect job sticking up for the unborn. Well, I'm going to vote for the party that does the best job of limiting the evil, even though they won't give me everything I want. Look, if there is a party sworn to uphold abortion and they control the chamber, then that party's agenda will be to kill pro-life legislation on demand. You've got to make sure the right party is in control.
Right.
It's not about individuals at the legislative level. It's more about which party is controlling. Greg Kokel puts it real well. Given a choice between a first-class arsonist and a second-class fireman, you vote for the second-class fireman and challenge him to do better. That's what we do in promoting the good as much as we're able.
Scott Klusendorf is my guest. Life Training Institute is the organization. ProLifeTraining.com is the website. Scott, we got about a minute. I just want to give you the opportunity to wrap this up. Speak directly to my listeners. Exhort them as we enter into this off-year election. And give us just a closing comment on where we stand pro-life-wise as far as the country goes. Where are we at?
Where we're at right now is this. The public is giving us a hearing, but we should not think that we've won. I know pro-life leaders love to tell young people, you're the generation that's going to end abortion. I don't think we should necessarily believe that's true. This is a long fight. It may not be over tomorrow, but surrender is not an option. So here's my advice, 3 points for young listeners. Number one, equip yourself to engage right now. Don't worry about how big is my impact at age 17. do things at age 17 that will put you in a position to make a huge impact in your 40s, 50s, and 60s.
15 seconds, Scott.
One of the ways to do that is to read, and if you go to our website, prolifetraining.com, we've got resources there to get you started.
Scott Klusendorf's been my guest. Prolifetraining.com's the website. If you like what you heard, and I know you did, go to their website, invite Scott and his team to your city. God bless you. God bless America. And remember, America, to bless God.
You've been listening to Mark Harrington, your radio activist, sponsored by Created Equal. For more information on how to become a witness against the evil plague in America, call Created Equal at 614-269-7808, 614-269-7808, or go online to createdequal.net, createdequal.net. Be sure to tune to The Mark Harrington Show next time for your marching orders in the culture war.